Could you give us an overview of why you have resigned, please?
Yes, well, for me, one of the key issues in relation to green issues in Spalthorn has always been the protection of the Greenbelt, and especially the protection of the Greenbelt in green spaces in the local plan that is forthcoming. So for me, this has been, so to speak, the red line, that I was not going to stand for any release of Greenbelt in the local plan.
So part of what you say is that if we had more green councillors, the weight of our steer for urgent and necessary change would have achieved a greater number of results within the council. How much power do you think you'll be able to demonstrate after leaving the council?
Well, I have certainly experienced over the 2 years that there has been, despite lip service to the contrary, that there has been more of a consolidation of a position that Greenbelt would be released across, and that was a position not only proactively put forward by the Conservatives, but also acquiesced in and certainly not fought by the majority of the opposition that is now part of the coalition, so to speak, in power. So we were really only less than a handful of councillors who were proactively speaking out against Greenbelt release. The rest was more about lip service. We all defended the Greenbelt, but, you know, we all really of the opinion that Greenbelt ought to be released. And so the few councillors that were actually proactively fighting, looking for solutions, trying to inform residents, were literally three councillors, and these were the three Staines councillors. So my colleagues, Tom Lagden, Dina Siva, and myself. And I do believe that if there had been a stronger green presence in the council, that would have been able to sway other parties, such as the Liberal Democrats, to actually proactively fight Greenbelt release, as opposed to just abstaining on green discussions and Greenbelt release decisions on the local plan task group that had been put in place, then the council would actually have been in a strong position to just state that we're not going to release Greenbelt in the local plan, and that was just the way it was going to be.
So surely now that one of that small opposition has left, it will be easier for them to put this through.
Well, the problem is, of course, that if you are one of three councillors in a council of literally 39 councillors, then your say is very limited. So I've tried very hard in the last 2 years to make the points, having received expert advice from legal professionals and strategic planners, that there's really no need for Spalthorn to release any local plan. But these submissions of mine have been either completely ignored or just constantly counteracted with new arguments. So what I've seen is not that there's any real willingness to listen to arguments and to weigh them up in the balance and to look for solutions that don't rely on Greenbelt release, but that Greenbelt release has been pursued as an argument at all costs. I was also particularly worried at attempts at Spalthorn to, for example, reduce the ability by councillors to ask questions at council meetings. So before the change to the committee system, there was certainly an attempt to change the Spalthorn Borough Council constitution to restrict councillors to one question. I put in a counter motion, which was thankfully adopted by one vote. But there were certainly considerable attempts to kind of shut up councillors who are openly calling people to account for either advocating Greenbelt release or owning Greenbelt and seeking to have that developed, or sort of being the voice of developers within the council.
So the Spalthorn Council is saying that the move to the committee system will give smaller parties more of a voice. Is that something that you believed to be so or not?
Not really, because, well, what the committee system is bringing out is hopefully more openness. I mean, for example, one issue that has been happening on the local plan is that the meetings were held in secret. There were no published minutes. They were not screened. No screening of the local plan task group meetings. And that was for the purpose to basically avoid any scrutiny by residents, to prevent residents from actually listening to who says what, rather than the lip service that councillors actually gave. So the councillors are still the same on the council, and the majority of all councillors, in my view, are not fighting the Green Belt release. So I would still be one of three voices on the council arguing against Green Belt release. So that would not be more influence. It would literally be a lost voice in the wilderness as far as the council is concerned. So my experience has been that residents groups and residents' power can be a lot more effective than being the one voice in the council that is clearly in a minority. So my view is that if residents do not want Greenbelt to be released, then they have to write to their councillors and make that very clear to them and campaign to protect their green spaces and their beloved Greenbelt sites.
Can you tell us about, do you have such campaigning in mind from outside the tent, as it were?
Yes, I mean, a while ago I started the 38 degree petition Save Our Greenbelt in Spelthorne, which has attracted over 6,600 signatures. So we would still call upon residents to sign it. Also, we've held Zoom seminars on information that enables residents to know the truth really behind Greenbelt release. The strategic planning experts and the chair of the London Greenbelt Council. So we are planning joint actions with residents and residents groups such as the Spelthorne Residents Association. And we are calling on residents to let their councillors know about how they feel about the Greenbelt and that they want them to protect it, not release it in the local plan. I'm also in touch with other residents groups that are facing the same struggles, including in Elmbridge, where a lot of associations have come together and have called on their council not to accept the standard methodology, but actually be creative in defining solutions to protect everyone's interests, i.e. to release green, to protect Greenbelt and green spaces, as well as to protect the sort of status quo and the way of living, rather than trying to force increased and unnecessary developments onto their communities.
So why does the council want to build on the Green Belt when you have outlined some reasons why they don't need to?
Well, I personally think that the whole issue on Green Belt release is one that is happening largely underneath the radar. So you have got the interests of the few, meaning Greenbelt owners, that are very keen on releasing Greenbelt, because you can buy Greenbelt for relatively little money, because the whole point of Greenbelt is that you're not really allowed to build on it. So the moment you have Greenbelt land that is stripped of its protection and becomes brownfield, it can increase in value by about 200,000% in cases or more. So there are definitely commercial interests by Greenbelt owners for whom having their Greenbelt stripped of protection means literally winning the lottery in terms of financial profits. So those Greenbelt owners, and there are many companies that will probably have been lobbying councils across the UK for years, have that as a strategy to try to get Greenbelt released. And greenbelt owners can be anything from private owners to universities to councils themselves that own greenbelt to the London Diocesan Fund, i.e. church groups, schools, etc. So you have a lot of greenbelt owners that might pretend that they're all aware of the climate emergency, but that are very keen privately to attract the profits that would fall into their lap when they succeed. So as an example, you've got Greenbelt is by law meant to be permanent. And when the Greenbelt boundaries were instituted, that was the idea, to stop the urban sprawl and to prevent communities merging into each other. So it is actually the status quo, Greenbelt protection. And you can only release it in either very special circumstances or in exceptional circumstances when it comes to local plans. Yet, a shocking 78% of the 66 local authorities within the London Metropolitan Greenbelt area are currently considering or proposing development on the London Metropolitan Greenbelt land. So you will have local authorities being lobbied incessantly in the preparation of their local plans, which happens every 5 years, by developers, by greenbelt owners. And on the other hand, you've got residents who are absolutely not in favor of greenbelt release because it only affects them negatively. There's no benefit to the residents. So I think what's happening is that you have these private interests continually lobbying councils across the country, because otherwise you definitely couldn't explain why the majority of councils are trying to release greenbelt when greenbelt release should be the exception and not the norm.
Could you tell us a bit about what form this lobbying takes, please, and anything that you've seen yourself?
Well, I mean, for example, when councils send out consultations about, you know, issues and options, you will have greenbelt owners writing in from sports clubs to schools, etc., and they will have their glossy brochures, and they will have spent a lot of money on consultants to make a case. And the case is always telling the local authority, you've got to release greenbelt. And the argument that is proposed all the time is, you need to meet your housing need, so you've got to release greenbelt. But that is factually false. First of all, local authorities are free to develop their own housing methodologies, and greenbelt is in itself a restraint on housing numbers. So there are some of those documents available online, but I think there's probably a lot more happening behind the scenes in terms of, you know, in terms of calls or emails or letters, or probably more. I mean, there's a lot of there are suspicions out there, but it's for sure that these submissions, certainly in terms of consultations, are ongoing, and that there's a lot of money involved and at stake. So there's clearly an interest by greenbelt owners and property developers to try to get local authorities to release greenbelt.
Okay, that's everything I wanted to ask. Is there anything else that you would like to say?
Yes, that I think unless residents stand up and hold councillors accountable, councillors who are meant to represent them and who are tasked to represent them, then greenbelt release in Spelthorne will be the inevitable result. Not because it has to happen, but because the council wants it to happen. So any arguments by councillors that it isn't their fault, and the attempts to blame national government, are both factually false and are hugely undemocratic, and that it tries to interrupt the link between individual accountability and decision-making. So any attempts by councillors to present to residents that they are strong defenders of the Greenbelt, whilst behind the scenes they are not opposing Greenbelt release or are pursuing it proactively, is a lie to residents. And I think that that is extremely shocking. So residents are called upon to be vigilant and to defend their greenbelt and green spaces, because if they don't do it, there are very few people who are going to try to do it for them.
Thank you very much for speaking to me. All the best for the future, I must say.
Thank you very much. I mean, if I can keep you informed when we have any actions, that would be great.
Of course you can, of course. Yeah, I'd be happy to speak to you.
That'd be wonderful. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you. Okay.
Have a good day.
You too. Goodbye.
Bye. Bye.
Recordings.